Carly is a composite. The blockages, the conversations, the doors that closed are real, and they are closing across Southwest now. This is their story. In one of the most deprived constituencies in the country, trained healthcare workers remain desperately needed while qualified candidates sit locked out of nursing degrees by funding caps that treat public investment as unaffordable debt. Affordable.
I knew I wanted to be a mental health nurse. From the day my brother Jake came home from school crying, aged 14, saying he couldn't breathe properly and didn't know why. Mum was working a double shift at Derriford Hospital, so it was just me trying to calm him down in our kitchen in Honock Knoll. That night, watching him struggle, I understood what Mum meant when she said the wards were desperate for mental health support, but never seemed to get the staff they needed. I spent 3 years working as a care assistant while studying for my Access to Health Professions course, saving every pound I could for university. When I applied to University of Plymouth's mental health nursing degree in 2022, I met every entry requirement. I had the grades, the experience, the references. The admissions team called me in March with what I thought would be good news. "Carly, your application is strong," the admissions officer said. "But I have to tell you, the course is oversubscribed. Health Education England has capped the funded places due to Treasury spending limits. We simply cannot take on more students this year." I asked how many people had applied. She told me they'd received applications from 340 qualified candidates for 60 funded places. I asked if that meant 280 people who wanted to be nurses, who'd met the requirements, were being turned away. She said yes, exactly that. I tried again in 2023. Same response, almost word for word. I broadened my search, applying to Exeter, Bath Spa, Bristol. Every admissions office told me the same thing. High demand, limited funded training places, Treasury constraints. I started volunteering at Plymouth Mental Health Crisis Cafe to strengthen my application, thinking maybe I just needed to stand out more. Sarah, the coordinator there, was blunt when I explained what I was trying to do. "Carly, it's not about you not being good enough," she said. "We've got the lecturers, we've got the clinical placements lined up with the hospital. Health Education England just says there's no budget for more student nurses. There is no funding." That sounded reasonable. Everyone was saying it. The government didn't have enough money to train more nurses, even though the wards needed them. I accepted it the way you accept the weather. Then, in early 2024, I was walking through the University of Plymouth campus after another volunteer shift when I noticed something odd. The nursing building had two lecture theatres on the second floor with the lights off and the doors locked. I'd never seen them in use. I asked a student I knew, and she said those rooms sat empty most days. The skills lab, where students practice taking blood and inserting IVs, was only used 3 days a week. I met Theo at a community meeting about public service cuts in March. He'd faced the same funding barriers trying to get onto a teacher training course. We started comparing notes, empty training facilities, qualified applicants turned away. The same phrase every time. There is no funding. I went back to the university and asked directly. The head of nursing admissions was surprisingly honest. "If the funding existed," she said, "we could easily accommodate 50 more nursing students per year. We have the lecture space, the simulation equipment, the clinical partnerships with Derriford. The constraint is not our capacity. It's the funding model." That was when I started to see the contradiction. The people who wanted to be nurses existed. I'd met dozens of them in waiting rooms, at volunteer placements, on access courses. The training facilities existed. I could see them sitting empty. The hospital wards that needed nurses existed. Mum told me about them every shift. The lecturers who could teach us existed. The university confirmed it. So what exactly was it that there was no money for? The government that prints the pound notes told me it couldn't find enough of those notes to connect the people who wanted to train with the facilities that were sitting unused and the wards that were understaffed. That didn't make sense anymore. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were, all of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still here, still volunteering at the Crisis Cafe, still watching the empty lecture theatres. But I understand now that what happened to me is happening in every constituency where people and needs exist, side by side. While someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare, the resources were there. The decision not to use them was political, not financial.
What Carly experienced has a name: fake experts. This technique relies on citing economists or commentators who treat the household budget analogy as self-evident truth, as though repeating it makes it real. It's like tobacco companies in the 1960s citing doctors who insisted smoking was harmless, or pharmaceutical companies today funding studies that downplay side effects. The key is finding credentialed voices willing to state what you need them to state. In Carly's case, every official who said there is no funding was repeating the same false analogy, that government budgets work like household budgets. When challenged about turning away qualified nursing candidates, they pointed to economists who insisted spending more on health training would cause inflation. But which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say, without naming them, is an appeal to unnamed authority. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources: people, skills, materials, time. And in Plymouth Moorview, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed, the people existed, the decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Plymouth Moorview ranks 147 out of 543 English constituencies on the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, placing it in the third most deprived decile. The constituency has 467 registered charities according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. These organisations received £5.3 million in total grants, according to 360 giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain,